I'm here to welcome, I'm here to say welcome to our new assistant superintendent for finance, Cheryl Whitman. My name is Jeff Cooper. Unfortunately, I have to read this, and I'll probably be looking down a lot. I'm the result of what happened. I'm the result when the district misspends ad nauseum and needs prodding to not waste taxpayer money. I FOIA items on the district's checkbook to see what real details are. I do the same with the district's MasterCard account. That is relevant here, as you'll be overseeing much of that. When I found out about that account pre-Dr. Gordon, there were about 45 people that were spending our money through it. It would have been a full-time job to monitor that. Now it's about half the number of people, but it's still a big job. But rest assured, you got me as a backup. If you don't catch the misspending, I will. In the past, bypassing Ms. Elder, who I have no problem with, the person in your position had no problems wasting our money. He thought it was okay to spend a couple nights on us in a hotel in Schaumburg. I guess that's what can happen when you're spending other people's money. And most of the board is sitting in the hotel. Well, not the guy in the hotel. So, once again, welcome. And I'm sure we'll be crossing paths. And here's something you probably never heard any truer. Spend it like it's your own.
Got it, Mr. Cooper?
That is it.
All right. Anybody else? Ms. Rayo? Good? Okay. All right. we'll introduce Ms. Witham here in a moment. We'll jump into the rejection of the Hadley Junior High roofing bids. So, with the roofing bids, they came in above projections quite a bit above projections. But in the rejection bid letter, which I think is an important document, it outlines where a majority of the water was penetrating, and it was coming through, I spoke to Dave a little bit earlier, right through that roof line by the flashing points. But again, it's not a major leak by any stretch. Dave was talking about it, when it's directional, when it's a perfect rain, do we get some moisture in there? We do. So they're recommending to do some of that that pinpointing. I apologize, I don't have my
tuck pointing.
Thank you. The academic guy is struggling on the facility pieces.
You
got to
pinpoint your tuck pointing.
You got to pinpoint the tuck pointing.
If you don't, then not tuck pointing the right areas.
So we feel like, based off of Dave's conversation with WJE, that if we took care of that aspect of it, we would be looking at closer to a $10,000 to $20,000 range, and it would remediate the issues that we're finding on the roof. Plus, with the task force recommendation, we don't want to do our work twice. So if the board made a decision to move forward and that was an area that they wanted to look at, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to do that work twice. So, a couple reasons why we're recommending the rejection. Overall cost came in quite a bit higher. Second piece is we can remediate the main cause through tuck pointing, pinpointing our tuck pointing. And then third, the task force recommendation would, if they took on that that cafetorium idea, that roofing area would be under construction. Cheryl, anything from your perspective on that you want to add, or are we good?
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. Board members?
Yeah, just from my perspective, it seems like Dave has gone through the process to isolate the area that is the problem, which is the proper way of going about it, and limiting the cost to this masonry work that appears to be the problem. Clearly, after it's done, you know, nature will tell you if that was
true
problem, but it appears from the documents that he's provided that is what the professionals are telling him,
mm-hmm.
and that's what he's moving forward with. So I feel comfortable with that. Clearly, if you were having a major leaking problem, the amount of money that you could lose because water will damage is something you'd want to consider. But I think this is the appropriate steps based on the feedback he received from the people in the field that tackle these problems. More than I do, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So that's from my perspective.
Okay.
I think that's a good way to go about it. I'm glad he went all the way back and when we first started this. I don't know if everybody remembers, but it was a line item budget of $550,000. And $42,000, I think, for the old architect's mm-hmm. drawings or something.
Yeah, you're right, the drawings.
Were just 42.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bill in here for these gentlemen on our last check registry, so I don't know if everybody saw that, but mm-hmm. it was far less than what the architect was going to charge us to do pre-designed drawings before they even knew what the problem was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad Dave took a step back and went about it in a very systematic way that allowed us to pinpoint the problem as we believe it is now. So
I appreciate that.
Review of it.
Kurt Spector, any feedback on those?
I'll echo Joe's comments that way, and I know you're specifically talking about a capitorum or if we
yeah.
add on that kind of a thing. What I want to make sure,
you know what, I should say the pots. I
yeah.
should say the pots.
Right,
I apologize, not
that
you,
be, right.
Yeah,
if,
we're
if,
saying
if
the same
if there's
thing.
There's additions or something that occur.
Yeah.
The thing that I want to make sure that we don't do, at least from my perspective, is I don't want to get into a situation with a referendum where we're taking capital projects and maintenance, things that we should be taking out of our budget, and putting those somehow wrapped into a
okay.
referendum. You know, and it makes sense if you're doing additions and some of that roof
mm-hmm.
needs to be replaced, but for me, if we're doing that, it means we're not prioritizing or haven't been prioritizing
mm-hmm.
prior properly to go ahead and make sure that we're fixing what we need to be fixing around here. So so for me, referendums are to build new buildings
mm-hmm.
or to build additions or those kinds of things to the community, but not maintenance items.
Okay.
So that would be the only thing I'd say about that.
And
okay.
I just add on to Kurt, I agree with that assessment. I think the thing that if there's timings of bigger projects occurring,
mm-hmm.
you can drive the price down on projects this
mm-hmm.
size if you time them right. But I'm going to say again what I said, timing of water damage is something you don't want to play too much
with. I would agree.
But I do think that he's isolated the problem based on his studies we see from the experts.
Okay.
My only comment was, should we put the work that's going to eventually need to be done back in our long-term planning, budgeting plan?
Mm-hmm.
Though we may be taking it out this year, we should probably say, okay, we need to take a look at this in 3 years
yep.
or something. So just
in that five-year capital project.
The one thing, Patrick, that the original report showed was that if we did certain maintenance of it per year, that we could get more life out of the existing roof and keep evaluating that with the maintenance program. And I think
so shouldn't that be a decision that Dave tells us that he wants to do? He wants to do a maintenance and patch strategy program versus a...
It was a little more than that. He did tell us that. He did. Part of this original budget was to do this area,
mm-hmm.
but then to do this ongoing, I don't want to call it servicing,
mm-hmm.
but there was an ongoing process. Servicing is probably
That's fine. I just don't want to lose the big number.
No, because you're going to eventually need to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And the question the thing I don't recall was what was the per one? Was it 3 to 5 years? And I
yeah.
want to say it was that range,
mm-hmm.
that it needs to be in that five-year budget. Because
yeah.
that number was 550.
Yeah, it was.
The roofs we have here the specs are very expensive.
You know, one of the things that did come out through the bidding process and when Dave reached out to the contractors, it was the size of the project led to some of the increased cost. Because you're still bringing out the same equipment and you need the same, the tarring. Now I'm way outside my realm.
You know, your mobilization
it's much,
so you get a higher per square foot cost when you're a smaller.
So I just wanted to bring that piece up, but that's good feedback for us.
Well, and I think that to Patrick's point, you leave it in. Mm-hmm. To Joe's point, I think if I'm understanding what he's saying correctly, is let's say there is there. Let's say there the portables are removed via referendum, and we go ahead and add the cost then to, while the roofers are already out there, to then just go ahead and fix. Let's say we don't do anything with mm-hmm. it, just fix the sections of roof. Mm-hmm. That may drive costs down. But at least to Patrick's point, then we've got in our capitals to do that if that's ever something that we need to do.
Absolutely.
So.
No, that sounds good. So to keep that within the five-year capital project renewal and not adding it to a referendum piece, saying, okay, we can get this done under the referendum,
absolutely.
But using the current operating budget for it.
Yeah, because if you start, if you put that in, if you put maintenance stuff in a referendum
on top of,
they'll tear it up. Because they'll say you're taking money from us. What do you guys spend?
Yeah,
you're not doing your job.
Understand it. Okay, so we'll move that on to the full board, and it is an actionable item tonight. So we'll do a little bit of discussion, board members. Finance Committee, if you chime into what you added,
said.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd appreciate it.
Drew, you can come sit, Drew.
Yeah, you can join us.
Exactly, it's a cool breeze coming down.
Yeah, I know it is a little chilly.
It might be a little.
Next up is the staffing update and the substitute pay. We want to start with a staffing update. Just any questions you may have had from Lori. We kind of flipped the learning. We sent that information out to you. But not sure if there were any questions, concerns that you had on that, or maybe as you think about that piece, we can come back to it second. However you want to do this. Were there any concerns about the staffing?
That was to us. No, I have no concerns about the staffing.
That Lori sent out
I
last week.
I appreciate the proposed.
Okay. Perfect. So then let's jump into the substitute pay. I put this on your desk. Kurt and Joe had requested this, proposed sub-rate increase impact, and then Lori and Cheryl worked together today to bring that for the board, but I'll let Lori kind of give us an overview of the sub.
It's been a long time since we've increased our rate of pay for our substitute teachers. I will tell you, every summer there's a survey that's done through our Page HR group where collect the rate of pay for subs, and every year I've been checking to see where we are and how we fell in terms of neighboring districts and across the county. This past summer, and actually more into the fall, I think largely in response to the shortage of substitutes, our neighboring districts have started to increase their rate of pay. Like I said, it's been 10 years for us since we've taken a look at it. So we've started to fall more to the middle, towards the end of the pack, and some of the neighboring districts around us have increased their rates, making us less competitive. Coupled with that, we have many of our substitute teachers who've worked for us for a long period of time, and 10 years is a long time to go without an increase. So for those two reasons, we are recommending an increase in the rate of pay. You'll see the structure in there in terms of how our current pay structure is, and the proposal that we are putting forth for discussion with the Finance Committee. Cheryl and I have worked together from a budgeting standpoint, and that's what Paul shared with you today in terms of the impact of the old rate versus the new rate and how that relates to usage. So any questions?
So this is feedback? So this proposed cost is using the increased dollar. This is a dollar day, not an hour, right?
It's not an hour.
Okay, thank
you. It's a half-day, full-day rate. Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is back-testing the new rates with last year's hours worked.
Correct.
Any concerns?
That dollar amount, where does it put us in the pack?
It puts us not at the very front, but it moves us up more in line with neighboring districts.
It puts us kind of in the middle.
Right.
It's
I mean, not way at the front, but...
It seems like 105, right? Just read through them. It's like all right around us.
Right. And where it really makes a difference, too, is not so much that starting rate, like what happens after 10 or 20 or 15 days in the district. So looking at the notes that I had in that that chart that was sent to you, I mean, a lot of them go up quite a bit after a certain number of days.
So it's not consecutive subbing. If I sub up to through December and January, 20 days, it was not consecutive. That's when my rate starts kicking
Correct, but it also does kick up in a long-term assignment to that, that even higher rate. That has to be consecutive for the 30 to 90 days. Right. But if the others were just kind of different classrooms scattered, you know, throughout the year, that would be
incentivized.
So we're in the midst of employee increases now, right?
Correct.
And you're basically saying what we're presenting here is a 10% increase for one class of employees.
Correct.
And not a 10% increase for another class of employees.
Correct.
But this class of employees hasn't had a pay raise in 10 years.
I understand that, appreciate that, but that's a message that you guys are going to have to convey or message. So, are we expecting any bumps and bruises on that? Never mind, disregard it.
And this is a group.
If you can predict that, tell me what the lottery number
is. So somebody
tell me first.
The interesting thing is though, that secondary increase, you're much more conservative than anything else is. When I just went through it, so you only increase $5, like, if I'm going up. Okay. So I'm good. Thanks for this analysis. Appreciate it.
Kurt? Patrick, you guys good? Moving on?
Yeah, I think Mr. Cooper Probably's point is not so much the dollar amount, but to make sure we're keeping our teachers in their classrooms as much as possible and not off in meetings where we're bringing a lot of subs in. So that's what really drives that number up, you know. So.
Okay. All right, thank you. So the next on our list is the budget discussion. Tonight, I am pleased, and we will do a more formal announcement in the full board meeting, but Cheryl Witham is here with us tonight. We are excited to have Cheryl on board working with us. She has an incredible background, again, that we'll talk a little bit more in the full board. But for tonight's meeting, one, I want her to introduce herself to you guys, working with each board member. So you've met Joe.
Right, please.
Okay. Kurt Buchholz is next. Drew Ellis. Patrick Escalante. So for tonight, what we wanted to do was get a sense of Cheryl's perspective on budgets. Again, Cheryl has worked in three different districts for a number of years now and has a great perspective on budgeting and what a budget should really speak to. So she's going to talk to you about her perspective on budgeting. We also sent the board two budgets from prior districts, from New Trier, Oak Park, River Forest. And then what we're going to be asking the board is, what are those pieces that you feel like our current budget is missing based off of where Cheryl and the district would like to take our budgeting as we move into this timeline. Again, remember we talked about the timeline probably a month or so ago, where we'll be bringing you a tentative budget somewhere in that late June timeline with a full adoption of the budget in the September timeline, which is later than in years past. Normally, we've adopted the full budget in August, but with Cheryl just coming on board, I mean, being a week and a day into the job, we really felt, and the board felt like, it was most appropriate to push that timeline out to September. So tonight kind of kicks that piece off for the board members and Cheryl as we start wrestling with the budget. So with that, hand it over to Cheryl.
Right, so it's three school districts in two states, and so different states have different requirements, which of course we will meet. And then there's also government accounting standards requirements, and it's kind of nice in the communication piece that you can actually move between your documents, whether it's your budget, your comprehensive annual financial statements, or your five-year planning, and they see like kinds of formats and wording and categories, all that sort of stuff. So it would be nice to kind of have that big perspective of meeting all those requirements. So from my experience, obviously, this budget document is a communication piece to our Board of Education to help you make good decisions, but also our community and our staff. And if you have a comprehensive enough budget document, you can use it throughout the year in communication. But we don't want it to be so overwhelming that no one can use it. And so each district and administration and Board of Education finds what's right for their community. On top of that, there is the Association of School Business Officials. They actually have done a study, and they found some best practices, and they actually recommend a format and a criteria, kind of best practices. I actually brought the booklet here. It's a pretty, it's a lot to go through. They do training, and then professionals review the budget and go through and make comments. And then there's kind of a standard then across the United States you're beginning to see develop. And so I've actually worked with Oak Park Brute Forest High School. We adopted that format, and we actually did win that award for several years in a row. Then I arrived at Nutrier, and actually, they wanted to talk about the budget document too, and we began to move in that direction. Nutrier had a slightly different perspective on what their needs were, and they didn't want it to be quite as large. They wanted to talk about, what's important for us, and we began moving in that direction and developing that budget. Sometimes it takes more than 1 year to get to where you want to be, because you're developing and gathering historical information, you're working on your five-year projections, and then you're working on your format and gathering data. The nice thing about the Meritorious Budget Award also is that now a lot of the rating agencies, they know about the Meritorious Budget Award. This is for when you're going out for debt. And then I can talk with them about the Meritorious Budget Award, our processes in getting to that place, and then they can read for themselves a lot of our goals and objectives, our policies and procedures, the way that we budget, our demographics, our district map, all this wonderful information is right there for them to look at whenever they want to. I've done several interviews with rating agencies at Oak Park Brute Forest High School. We moved to a AAA rating while I was there. At Minnetonka Public Schools, we moved to a AAA rating while I was there. And Nutrier has already had a AAA rating. And we maintained it, and that $8 million offers. So it's really nice to be able to walk into that rating agency with a really nice document that we'll probably. Again, this format is internationally recognized, and the format is very similar to the GASB requirements, to our state of Illinois requirements, and then you'll see that there's consistency between those reports. So this criteria, this international award, doesn't change the flexibility that we have to use that same kind of format. So there are four major sections that they recommend. An introductory section, that's where the executive summary is. So we always try to design something that can be liftable. Someone can just read the executive summary, and they can stop there if they want to. That also has district information, enrollment trends, personnel resources. It gives a little overview of the debt. You'll see the mission statement and their goals. And then we talk a little bit about external trends and legislation and things that might impact the school district. So that's kind of introductory executive. Then we go into the organizational section where it explains our fund balance accounting, our policies and government regulations, how our revenue is generated, our organization chart, the district map, our processes and budget management. Then you get into all the finances, and it kind of gives an overview of all of our funds, and then it drills down into the different funds. It looks at the current budget, historical results, gives the five-year projections, and then it talks about the debt obligations, the current debt obligations, the capital projects, the construction projects I mentioned in this section. And then it goes into greater detail in the informational section. A lot of this information you also see in your comprehensive annual financial report, where you talk about the property taxes, the impact on local taxpayers, a little bit more about how we developed our five-year projection model, our personnel resources, our bond amortization schedules, and then you talk a lot about your academic performance.
performance there, and then you give a little glossary of terms at the end that helps the reader. And so there's no, here in the state of Illinois, you just have to, you're only required to do that ISBE report. I think maybe you have seen it, you submit that to the state of Illinois. But then what you do on top of that as a communication piece and as a decision-making document is really up to us. And the only place where you kind of find the best practices that I've come across that's specific to school district is this meritorious budget award. The DFOA also has an award, but that's for the annual financial statements and not for the budget. That's really kind of broad brush to kind of maybe kick off the conversation for all of us. And I want to learn about what you need to make good decisions. It's a good communication tool for you. I'd like to provide something that all year long, when anyone asks you a question, you can go to that document and say, well, you know what, enrollment trends are on page whatever, or you can look here for academic performance, or our five-year projections are here. You can find it really easy to answer questions, and you can make the decisions as you give them. So, whatever you'd like to tell me about what your needs and requirements are.
I have a question. Are you familiar with our auditing firm?
Yes, I've worked with that group.
Okay. So they're familiar with this budgeting process that you're...
Yes. Yes, I worked with this firm at Oakland Group for some time.
Was there going to be more?
No, no. We're just kind of opening it up to you guys now to kind of get feedback on the budgeting.
He's very engaged.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
I apologize, Joe.
I was having a conversation instead of...
No, you're good.
Oak Parks is much more intense than the Trailers. I mean, the amount of narrative in there is much more significant than the documents. It takes longer
and
longer.
And we were building a document at Nutrier. We were moving towards... more information, but I don't think they were ever going to go as far as Oak Park to them, the amount of information. So, the sweet spot is somewhere in there. What is the right amount of information for us?
Because if you get too big, the information gets lost and it overwhelms people just to open up a 200 and whatever page you've got.
240.
Yeah, 240. So for me, just on their size, leaning towards more than the Trailers. It's something that makes sense. I mean, the organization of the document is exactly how you describe, and so you're tying all these things together, and that's a key component to what I read and I thought would be very helpful for us.
How many staff hours went into producing these two documents, or how many FTEs did you need to be able to calculate to produce this?
Well, good question. Both of the documents, I prepared most of it, narrative. I work with PMA, so you'll actually recognize the format, right? And so those ending charts look very familiar from your five-year plan. Those are actually from PMA, so that's generated right out of their software. So then all of the other charts and things like that in the narrative are things that I wrote and put together, and then I marry those two documents together in a PDF. And so primarily, most of the time, it's my time. It absolutely takes weeks in the summer to write that. Once you have a template, though, like Oak Park Workforce High School's template, then on an annual basis, I write the executive summary, all of their current information, but you don't have to go back year after year and write all of the information about the history of the school district. You're just updating it. So it's much more time. That's why you build it maybe over 1 or 2 or 3 years, because it's much more time on the front end, and then each year you're just building on that. So then if there's a staff accountant, in a couple of districts I had a staff accountant, sometimes that person would get a little bit of information for me spending maybe 8 to 16 hours or something like that, gathering information for me to build charts, special questions, and things like that. Exact number, but it's not a lot of FTE.
I read through those other two reports, and I'm thinking, you know, if you need a huge staff of people to do it, but if it's you, I'm like, I'm impressed. I liked it, you know.
And give us the old parking report.
Yeah, more narrative.
The communications person, I do have to mention, the communication person then helps proofread.
Okay.
And in each district, then after I've done a lot of the work, the communication person would be a little bit different.
From a historic standpoint, you've looked at our data historically. Is it in a format that will make it easy for you or difficult for you to go ahead and have that backward-looking information which is necessary for you to have these reports?
It depends on, I'm comfortable and I know Skyward and right. I can see that we've used some of the function of the objects correctly. What I don't know yet is if the data then has been coded and that will take a little bit of experience of actually figuring out if our actual data has been coded to the proper places. I've seen a little bit of not proper coding, but I'll try to sort all that out and get that correct. One of the nice things about PMA software, they just launched some new software, and you put your historical ISP reports out there, and it can actually drill down to the account code now. And so now I can use Skyward and the PMA software and get to maybe where we want, and I'm hoping that might save me some time in gathering the historical data.
Okay.
I'm still learning that new software too. They're just launching it, and they're also working on launching that part that helped create the budget. And so, you know, we'll have to kind of see how that's the way we want to go, see how that works out.
Then you've got all the information from the gaffer as well.
Yeah.
I think we have a pretty comprehensive document from our accountants.
Right, the comprehensive annual financial statements. That's what you report. That's what you're mentioning. Yes, there are lots of statistical tables in there, and we can gather data, historical data from there. It doesn't go into the depth that this report does. It's more just by function and a little bit by object. So
we
have to dig into the AFR and the PML.
Right. The Skyward, you should have all those in Skyward.
I can see it in there.
So Cheryl, I got some questions. These might be, don't consider these interview questions. questions.
I'm already here.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're already here.
Board taking action.
So when I was looking through the reports and I looked at the financial projections, and it looks like they just went out 3 years on the ones that I saw. You know, one of the things that I think we have, that I have a concern, not a concern, that I would like to see is that 5 to 7 year. That gives you a more long-term vision of what we're trying to do, the big bucket items. Is what you do in your 3-year plans, can you extrapolate that type of communication model to your 5 and 7 year plans? Or is it, no, I just go talk to them and they give me a number in the air?
It can be extrapolated out. And so to give you some examples, one district I worked at, like more of the 3 to 5 year plan, one district really, we looked out 10 years all the time. We talked about 10 years. Knowing that in 10 years a lot is going to change, but they really wanted to know how long the referendum that they had passed was going to last, and we were monitoring fund balances very carefully. And so I was constantly rolling a 10-year model and through PMA, and we were talking about that. That's what that district wanted and what they wanted to do. Some districts only want to look at 3 years because they believe anything past 3 years is too hard to predict and you shouldn't be planning on that. PMA and this criteria, they recommend 5 years. So, again, that's what we talk about together. Whatever it is, between 3 and 10 years, I don't have any problem with us talking about the criteria, the assumptions that we use to use a model like that. Mm-hmm. Again, knowing the restrictions on either one, 3 or 10 years, if we know in our mind what is good and bad about that and how we use that.
Okay. All right, so that helps. So when you put a 200-page document together, it takes you a lot of time, and then it's there, right? And a budget is traditionally a budget is what we're doing next year and what we did last year, right? So how do you keep us engaged? What's your thoughts in keeping us engaged? How often on those budgetary items that need to be brought to our attention? And what are those triggers that you have set personally that says, Paul, Lori, I need to bring something to the board?
I like to think of it as the five-year projection model as the beginning of a process. Kind of talking about this out loud with you. And so we talk about that five-year projection, and we're actually beginning to say how much money we're going to spend next year. That kind of keeps that out. That being, normally when I deliver the final budget, the projection's there with it. And then the capital projects, as you guys have done, your construction projects, you have those kind of planned out for several years. And so in that fall time, then we begin one at a time approving these different things. So first coming to you would be the construction and the capital projects, and we're getting those approved almost a year in advance so that we're drawing and planning and we're first out the market for bids. Then we're bringing to you what we found out about the levy and all the levy information. That's in that October, November, December time frame. That's all a part of the budget process. Then right in the beginning of the year, we kick off budgeting with our departments here in our program areas, and we're talking with you about staffing. We're bringing you staffing. And so all along the way, you're approving different aspects of the budget, and we're bringing you updates then throughout the spring. So by the time we get into that May-June time frame, you basically know where we're at. And then it's really nice if before everyone goes home for the summer, we're telling them the department budgets are set.
Right, and I think it helps. You know, Dave should be commended for, you know, being that leader that put that long-range plan out there, because every time we change something, they said, didn't we change it on Dave's plan? So
you're well on your way.
But, you know, for the other departments, the other large ledger balance items, you know, that's something that I think as a board that we should take a look at is, okay, if we're changing something in something outside of that, IT, technology, I'm not going to use any other stuff or something like that. Okay, here's the IT budget, and Mike has one out there. How do we keep almost a quarterly update to say, okay, this is where you guys, this is what we budgeted, this is what we're planned, or even during our discussion items. Somebody at Mike is talking about technology, refresh, blah, blah, blah. The last 2 minutes of that presentation is, okay, and Cheryl will tell you what the impact was for last year, this year, and what's going to happen, you know, in the following years. I think that helps. That would help me as a board member understand the finances of, of that kind of information. So do you see your role as the finance person coming to the board quarterly and kind of giving us a state of the budget, per se?
Well,
we do it monthly, and it's a very we get a lot of information, right? Sometimes a lot of information, you just get buried with information. You know, to your point as executive summary, there's a possibly a quarterly update. This is the state of our finances, blah, blah, blah. You have all that documentation. We talk about it monthly, but wrap it in a bow, and so we can have those conversations and keep it on top of everybody's head. Are you familiar, I'm sure you are familiar, with the investment vehicles that we can use in PMA? That is another conversation that I've been trying to have with PMA, but haven't had much luck to see what we can do to increase yield on our investments. There's just nothing out there except possibly going to the repo market, and I don't think we want to take that risk here.
PMA specializes in short-term.
Right. Well, that's kind of the only thing that we can get
into.
That's
great. Well, perhaps you could go a little longer term, and I know of other ways in which to get greater yield a little longer term. And I'm open to that conversation. I heavily manage. I played a very active role in managing investments at Nutrier, and some of it was outside of PMA. But they have great short-term rates. But if you can go over 1 year with some of your fund balances, if you know that you're going to have them over a year, 1, 2, or 3 years, or if we do a referendum, we have construction funds for a couple of years, I can ladder invest
exactly.
And get a greater return, and we can absolutely have a conversation about that.
So what are your triggers? What are your red flags, amber flags. They should never be red flags by that time. What are your amber flags that you need to tell Paul about in the budgeting process?
During the budgeting process?
In your role as the finance.
Well, Paul and I are going to talk pretty much on a daily basis.
3 to 4 times a day.
About finances. And so I like superintendent to know from me immediately anything that I know that I think is of concern. If I see that maybe special education tuition is trending more than I expected, or transportation, we have to add a bus or something mm-hmm. like that. There are things that happen along the way. Construction bids maybe come in higher than we were expecting. He'll hear from me the moment that I know. And then we'll talk about, you know, what do we take to the Board of Education and when. Sometimes we don't.
It's immediate.
We're required to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have a conversation with special education, and they know that tuition is still going to come in under budget, things like that. But the superintendent and I will be communicating regularly, and he's going to know everything that I know about finances.
Okay. What do you want to deliver to the board by June?
By June. In the districts that I've worked with, I do kind of a mini version of that larger budget, which is an update. It's got a lot of information in there, not a lot of the narrative. But you'll see information by fund. That's normally my practice. You know exactly what's going on in each fund, and I give you the major highlights of what the increases or decreases are by program area or by type of spending. It's a much smaller kind of a document, and then over the summer I can create that bigger document for you. That so by the time you're making a final vote, then you know everything you need to know for a final vote. That's what I would hold. We
yep.
haven't actually talked about what that exact document would be, but it's a little pared down from the newer document that you saw. I could perhaps send you an example. Or
mm-hmm.
like that.
I think it'd be good.
Okay.
Kurt, I know you wanted to add a few questions.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I was wondering to us what we were going to deliver to us. I had a similar question, so that's been answered. I would echo, I think 5 years is probably a good compromise. But I do think we need to project that out because, you know, boards change. That's one of the hard things about you know, you have you know your revenues. What you don't know is board members and how they want to spend that revenue. So that can change, but that board members know that the revenue is there or not there, I think is important. So the value or the value system of a board and its superintendent can change in a 3 or 4 year period by election, but that those decisions are still being based on dollars that we know are available or not available. So I think that's a bit of that's just a comment that way. I know last year, Paul, we switched the budget in terms of budget at the buildings, right? At the building level?
Yeah, a little bit more detailed at the building, so where we gave them a per pupil allocation as opposed to how it was done in years past, where it was more of a lump sum.
Okay.
But we went to, how did we calculate that? And that's what we came up with, a per pupil allocation at the elementary and at Hadley.
So my question is, what do you think about that?
You'll see that often in districts with multiple buildings, that they agree on some way in which they allocate funds like that. And they'll do that in different ways depending on the type of students that are in the building, be it pre-K or special ed is in a specific building or something like that. So it's actually pretty common to do some kind of a per pupil spending. And then sometimes they do, like for staff development, might be a per staff allocation. Other kinds of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a neat, you know, whatever the school district wants to do. I've done zero-based budgeting before with multiple sites where we've said starting over every year it's zero-based and we're going to analyze everything that you request in all the programs. And District 300, Carpentersville, has a model called EBERT where they evaluate every program. The thing about that is that it's a lot of time and resources, and so there's this cost benefit that you have to think through in those kinds of models. Do we want to spend all of our resources on working on the budget, or do we want to spend most of our resources on educating kids and we're in the classroom? So it's somewhere in between there, balancing those kinds of aspects of how we use our human resources and our financial resources. So what you'll hear me say here is we are always good stewards, always in everything that we do in our finances, how we work with kids and our human resources and our real estate and our capital assets will always be good resources. And so wanting to balance the time that we spend on things to make sure that we're getting a good rate of return on that. Mm-hmm. Not spending so much time budgeting that we've just spent all of our money budgeting. That's an extreme example, but that's what we've got.
Yes, I understand. Yeah, because I have some concerns about the per pupil part of it, but I'd be curious to see. You know, I'm just curious. For me, part of it is I looked through this and I read through OPARC, the detail in it. I agree with Joe, it's probably a little more detailed than most people might tune out to it. But for me, as you said, this is probably going to be, for all of us, a work in progress over the next couple of years to work together and see things that, you know, as they develop, say maybe we like them or don't like them. So, and then budget. The other question I have, which maybe I'll wait till later, maybe it could tie in. I've been big on trying to form a financing committee here of citizens, and kind of to Patrick's point, we have some really, really brilliant people in this town. So, and as I've said, they're a lot smarter from a finance standpoint than I am. So, and we have some good finance people mm-hmm. on the board. So, and we've been waiting for you. So, that's kind of why we've
mm-hmm. you know.
So, because I'd really like to see, this is just my, I just really like to see a finance committee of citizens that, you know, maybe initially they're meeting once a month, but as it moves on, they're meeting once a quarter or something, but that they're really vetting a lot of things and then making recommendations to us, and then we're having those conversations on recommendations. But so those are my two cents on the finance committee, but I think if it hasn't been told you, it's probably in your land to start working on it.
Yeah, we've talked about it, because it's the full board who's really talked about that,
right.
Championed by you, Kurt, and others. And here's the great thing. Cheryl's actually participated in different kind of committees, and then some are task force. So she's seen them in a variety of ways. So I think I know she's absolutely the right person to help us down that road.
So is the next step to have you kind of explain the ones that you've seen that have been successful?
I think in the summer. Her a few more days on the job, and come back in the summer, kind of that late summer, maybe June or that August one, where we really talk about the different structures. And that's a piece that we can send in a weekly update, different structures that she's been a part of that Cheryl could just write up for us, and then we can have a conversation either in that end of June, beginning of August, what the board would like to see.
Structure and purpose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But on the projections, just, you know, Patrick said 5 mm-hmm. years, Kurt said 5 years. I mean, you want the direction of where we're looking for how now as you start.
Yeah, you should.
Because, I mean, I...
Yeah, right now would be a good one
yeah,
for that.
I think 5 years is what we've always been trying for. And if anybody thinks we need to go longer, they should chime in. But I think 5 is appropriate, because mm-hmm. after that, things can get very murky. So... That's how I look at it.
So I hear some consensus around that 5.
Drew, you here? What do you think?
You know, I think 5's a minimum. I mean, again, I'd like to see some forecasting longer than that. Maybe not to the detail or the depth and breadth, but the 5-year projections. But, you know, I'm a big proponent on modeling and projections. I do want to say I agree wholeheartedly with Kurt in terms of, you know, reestablishing the finance advisory committee we had and kind of fell off. I think that's a great resource. There's tons of people with a lot of financial smarts that's like an untapped resource for us. So I'm very much in favor of that. I really had just two very, very quick questions. You know, Paul had talked about putting together a holistic budget, which I think it starts at the building level, mm-hmm. and kind of it filters up and down. Is that Is that something that you're familiar with? Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I think the more staff that you get involved in developing the budgets they're going to work with, I think the better off we are. You have a lot of conversations, and they have 4 or 5 in the budget.
And my other question, I know, and I do agree with Patrick about the returns. I mean, that's been an issue with us. The other thing that I'd really like to see is comparative matrix, a spread that shows me how do we look not just district wide, but you know, compared to like districts. And I'd like to see that in a 1 or 2 page spreadsheet that's manageable to read and I can follow.
Okay. So I definitely hear some consensus around 5-year projections, and if possible, going beyond that. The other thing that I heard a couple board members talk about is more of a Nutrier-like budget, not as heavy with the narrative at the Oak Park one. Oak Park seemed to be maybe a little too much, but again, it's us over the next couple of years trying to find that just right piece, but we'll be shooting closer towards a new Trier. But this, again, this whole piece is a work in progress as we build it.
School, right? Was it just the high school, right?
One school.
I mean, that, you know, imagine if they had 5,000.
We'd add it by building.
Yeah. Any other feedback for Cheryl?
Thank you, Cheryl.
Cheryl, thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, with that, we will adjourn the Finance Committee meeting. Thank you, everybody.